We know at least 9 individuals have been arrested in our state since immigration raids began under the Trump administration.
The law is the law.
Yes, Patty Murray. But of course, she wasn't talking about
people you recognize
in the country
that voice.
Illegally following the law. No.
Now, that was Patty Murray last night at this press conference with Senate Democrats in D.C. after Trump froze some of this budget money or this grant money, basically. And then, of course, the judge ended up pausing all of that. But the Democrats were freaking out.
Well, yes, because, again, it's all about shoveling out money. And Biden was shoveling out a lot of it in the last few months of his administration. And, of course, in the run-up to the election as well. And so, yes, they want that money to get out to their, you know, preferred grant recipients or preferred agency or whatnot. Look, or contractor. Look, the judge said it will be on pause temporarily. Don't know if it will be permanent or not, but the judge also said that there is no freeze on anything from January 20th on. So this is just whether Trump can cancel spending that is in the pipeline.
Are you still paying for the panda bears? You can bring that up.
Yes. I love the story, and it's received such little attention. Let's give it a little right now before we start our legendary lyric contest. I'm talking about the Woodland Park Zoo is going to be featuring Chinese pandas.
Well, no, it's actually the National Zoo in D.C.
But aren't they from China? Aren't the panda bears in D.C.?
Yes. The panda bears.
Not,
well,
they've
you
been
said
delivered
Woodland
to
Park.
The U.S.
I need to get you better coffee. You said Woodland Park Zoo, Seattle. It's the National Zoo in D.C. where they're all set up.
Oh, I thought they were going to go on tour.
Well,
I don't know if that's the immediate plan.
Okay.
No, they're just, I don't think we'd spend this kind of money.
Okay, yeah.
Here. But
I thought they were going to put them on, you know, bring them around the country.
Yeah.
But okay.
So we've had them here before. They just arrived at the end of last week. Big celebration, National Zoo, D.C. It's a great zoo to go to. Panda bears are all there. And then my wife brought to attention, she goes, Mark, did you see the little expense involved here to have these pandas?
$20 million.
Yeah, about $2.8 million every year. And apparently we've signed a contract with China of 10 years to have them here. I don't know what the emission is to the National Zoo.
So that's
Zoo.
That's all closer to $30 million.
Yeah.
Boy, I wonder how they're going to recoup that money.
And they call it some kind of a housing deal with China to have the panda bears here. But then, okay, we're providing the housing, but why do we have to pay for it back to the owners? And I think they bring some of their special folks with the panda bears to the U.S. to help work with the panda bears. That I haven't confirmed, but I would think that would be included because I don't think we know much about panda bears.
Okay. If you want to know the exact opposite of Karine Jean-Pierre, the most forlorn, incompetent, inept, over-her-head press spokesperson in American history. She said she was going to make history, but she thought she was going to make history because she's a black woman, a black gay woman. No, that's not why she made history. She made history because she's just unprecedentedly incompetent. But she's not there anymore. Carolyn Leavitt is there. You're going to hear part of what she said in her debut performance as Donald Trump's new spokesperson. Get this. Carolyn Leavitt, who is now speaking for the administration, the voice of the White House every day, is 27 years old.
So what did you think? You and I watched her yesterday. I think she did fine.
Incredibly impressed with her poise, her composure, her confidence. You've got to understand, if you're looking for the most hot stove position in government in Washington, D.C., it's White House press spokesman, especially during a Republican administration, because the room is filled with the national press who are there to play a daily game of gotcha. And if the person behind the podium falters or stutter steps or hesitates or misspeaks.
Must have eye contact, John. That works.
Everybody sees it on the evening news. And then again, where it's posted, and it's posted many millions of times more on various social media sites. So you talk about a high-pressure job. There you have it. Now, some people, like me, would just relish that, would just love being in the mix, love that kind of a show, daily showdown. But Carolyn Leavitt, like I said, is 27 years of age, and she handled herself admirably.
Yeah, think about some of the big guns from ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, CNN.
Yeah. Well, not Jim Acosta, you know, not him anymore.
But, you know, I watched Mary Bruce had a chance with her last night, and I went, oh, gosh, here it comes. And not a problem, John. It's like she understands the media. She knows how to play the game there on the podium.
And Mark Christopher's take on this is actually more important and more revealing than mine, because I'm looking at it as a conservative who supports what's going on. Mark is not as political. Mark is not a political guy day in, day out.
Like I told the people at the inauguration fund we had there, you know, down in Kent there for inauguration day. They said, what are you, Mark? I said, just think of the guy in the middle, you know? I'm here, I'm living, I'm paying the prices for eggs like Phil, the gas prices, whatever. I just want to know what's going on, and the country needs to get back to business. And we have somebody now who knows how to run business, who has lost at things and has won at things. But it's just, again, I watch as a consumer.
Yeah, and as someone who knows the media and said, hey, that gal seems to have her act together. This gal actually seems to know what she's talking about. This gal doesn't have a 17-inch briefing book that she needs to lug around her and put on the podium so she can hurriedly look up what she's supposed to be saying.
Well, I'm not impressed, John, because she's not sitting there looking at notes constantly on the podium. She's doing the eye contact. It's like, oh, there's my note. Meanwhile, let me tell you what's going on. Here's the latest. I mean, the eye contact is the key, and she's got it.
Yes. So we'll get into, we'll play some of Carolyn Leavitt's remarks. Again, brand new press spokesman, and yes, it really does matter who your press person is. Right now, however, it's Wednesday, and you know what happens on Wednesday, the John Carlson Show. It's our legendary lyric contest. The way this contest works, I read you the lyric from a classic hit song from the past. And when you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, you be the 10th caller at 206-421-5757. It's 206-421-5757. Be that caller, and you might get a little treat coming your way.
Yeah, everybody can relate to this one. Yeah, and Daniel's brother is the one that's going to put the steak on your plate around here. USDA choice. You take a pick. They got the seafood. Why not? We're in the Northwest. High-end spirits, chicken choices, 4 locations. Take your pick. All the shopping there in Bellevue, bam. Daniel's is right there. Downtown Seattle for theater and fun, they are there. Leschi, great view of the lake. Show somebody a floating bridge if they're from out of town. And South Lake Union, watch all the planes up and down. And, of course, all the boats. Dine in, dine out. Do your orders online, John. DanielsBroiler.com. Have a look at the menu.
All right. So I'm going to read you the lyric. And I thought it was going to be tough, because this song goes back to the 70s. But Radio Legend got it right away. And I think Philip J. Vandenbroek III was on the verge of
it. I had no clue. I thought the first couple of word lines, I thought I had a bead on it, and no.
You were on the verge of slapping the table, which usually means I've got it.
Yeah.
And you had your hand hovering, you know, like when they're hovering their hand above the buzzer on Jeopardy.
Yep.
But
I couldn't clue it in.
Mark Christopher beat you to it. Here's your lyric. Drive-in movies, comic books and blue jeans, howdy doody, baseball cards and birthdays. What is that a lyric to? Well, I guarantee you've heard it many, many, many times. One more time. Drive-in movies, comic books and blue jeans, Howdy Doody, baseball cards and birthdays. Where have you heard that lyric? Because I guarantee you have many, 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 many times before. All right, with that said, Carolyn Leavitt, age 27, facing the press, her first official day on the job. She was one of Donald Trump's favorite campaign spokespeople, so she's got some experience, and she knows how to deal with tight deadlines and the like. Anyway, she gets up there, and this was her message to reporters. Have a listen.
To the American people.
I commit to telling the truth from this podium every single day. I commit to speaking on behalf of the President of the United States. That is my job. And I will say it's very easy to speak truth from this podium when you have a president who is implementing policies that are wildly popular with the American people. And that's exactly what this administration is doing. It's correcting the lies and the wrongs of the past 4 years, many of the lies that have been told to your faces in this very briefing room. I will not do that. But since you brought up Truth Seek, I would like to point out, while I vow to provide the truth from this podium, we ask that all of you in this room hold yourselves to that same standard. We know for a fact there have been lies that have been pushed by many legacy media outlets in this country about this president, about his family, and we will not accept that. We will call you out when we feel that your reporting is wrong or there is misinformation about this White House. So, yes, I will hold myself to the truth, and I expect everyone in this room to
do the same. Wow. How about that? Yes, I'm here to tell the truth, and I know you're going to hold me accountable. And yes, you're supposed to tell the truth, and I'm going to hold you accountable. That's a 27-year-old telling all these media people, these millennials and boomers, all these folks in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, yeah, you're going to tell the truth too. And when you don't, I'll be all over you from this podium. So good for her. By the way, she broke a little news here. I gave an update. You remember those drone sightings? Couple of months ago.
Oh, I forgot all about them, John.
All around New Jersey.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, yeah. Where are they from? What's going on? What country sent them? There were people speculating, oh, they must have been launched from an Iranian ship in the Atlantic. You have to wonder what's really going on here. Anyway, she said, here is what they were all about.
And before I turn to questions, I do have news directly from the President of the United States that was just shared with me in the Oval Office from President Trump directly, an update on the New Jersey drones. After research and study, the drones that were flying over New Jersey in large numbers were authorized to be flown by the FAA for research and various other reasons. Many of these drones were also hobbyists, recreational and private individuals that enjoy flying drones. In time, it got worse due to curiosity. This was not the enemy.
Okay. So that is Carolyn Leavitt, your new press secretary, your new White House press spokesperson, holding forth on her first day. Someone who used to be in the White House press room, who no longer is Jim Acosta, who went from reporting to having his own show on CNN. Now he doesn't have that anymore either. He is leaving CNN. In fact, he has left the building. Here's what he had to say last night.
It is never a good time to bow down to a tyrant. I have always believed it's the job of the press to hold power to account. I've always tried to do that here at CNN, and I plan on doing all of that in the future. One final message. Don't give in to the lies. Don't give in to the fear.
They don't. That's why they've been switching to different stations from CNN, but go ahead.
Hold on to the truth and to hope. Even if you have to get out your phone, record that message. I will not give in to the lies. I will not give in to the fear. Post it on your social media so people can hear from you too.
All right. This is what Jim Acosta thinks is telling the truth. This is Jim Acosta's, let's say, quick, thanks to our friends at Media Research Center, a quick collage of his lowlights. This is his idea of the truth.
I'll have more to say about...
Oh, enough of you. Hold on. Let's go to this. Yeah, it's not playing. Try it one more time.
Here, I'll play it.
Okay.
Damn it, I will say it out loud. That it is our right, it is our duty, it is our role to ask the President of the United States if he's a racist. At one point during this address, the President referred to the coronavirus as a, quote, foreign virus. It's going to come across to a lot of Americans as smacking of xenophobia. The President seems to harbor racist feelings about people of color. He also continued to paint immigrants as criminals when they come across the border illegally. Donald Trump's radical ultra-nationalist agenda beginning to take shape this morning. The President of the United States looking like a wannabe dictator. A hard-right Supreme Court appears poised to turn back the clock to the 1970s. Jake, I think our founding fathers are probably rolling in their graves right now. What are you, the voter, prepared to do to hold accountable those politicians who choose Trump over American democracy?
Okay, again, just stop the tape there. This is what Jim Acosta thinks is simple truth-telling. Okay, this is not truth-telling. This is strident, anti-Trump invective. This is what you would get during happy hour at the Democratic National Committee. Okay? This is not someone who is, quote, telling the truth. All right, real quickly, let's continue.
A rampage about critical race theory. This is just the latest outrage device over at Fox, is it not? The Republican Party is caught in a riptide of disinformation. It's carrying the rest of the country out to sea. We're hearing about so-called cheap fakes. And all of this is to try to make the case that Biden is slipping, he's confused. That address probably should have come with a Surgeon General's warning. It was hazardous to the truth. The experts are telling us to listen to the science. And yet some of these GOP leaders won't say the science part out loud.
Facts first, Jim.
Facts first, exactly. Purists in the field of journalism and academics opining from the safety of the classroom can lament the downfall of neutrality. But neutrality for the sake of neutrality doesn't really serve us in the age of Trump.
Okay, in other words, there is no neutrality when it comes to Trump. There is no objectivity. Our goal is to try and take him down with, as you hear, exaggeration, hyperbole, distortion, and lies of his own. Gee, I wonder if he'll be missed. I don't think so. I don't think so. Anyway, Jim Acosta, no longer on CNN. It's 22 minutes after 6. Philip Jay's very much on KVI with the social media sweep right around the corner. Good morning. While Paul Simon's talking in the dark, Philip Jay is a ray of light and enlightenment with a social media sweep.
There's an intro, Phil.
All right, I got to start with a follow-up to yesterday.
Yeah?
I was talking about, I guess it was DEA-type raid, ICE raid, and it was in the Denver area, but it ended up snaring several suspected members of the Tren de Aragua Venezuelan gang.
50.
And I have an update.
Yeah.
DEA Rocky Mountain Division is the Twitter handle that I was following. And they say that DEA West Metro Task Force operation in the Denver area this morning, two more were arrested. Those two were in the U.S. illegally. And they seized 130,000 fentanyl pills along with cocaine, meth, and heroin. Suspects seem to have ties to the Sinaloa and Jalisco cartels based in Mexico.
Well, that's a real surprise to everyone.
Combine that with this post from the United States Homeland Security Department on social media. They write, in the first week of the Trump administration, we fulfilled President Trump's promise to the American people to arrest and deport violent criminals illegally in the country. So, again, that idea of criminals, violent criminals, illegally in the country, and the number that they have for deportations, law enforcement officials have removed and returned 7,300 illegal aliens
already
in a week.
Already.
So that's one of the numbers to keep track of, 7,300.
1,000 a day. And you know what Donald Trump, his reaction was to that? More still, please.
Yeah.
He wants more than 1,000. He wants 1,800 a day out.
And I think that.
And now that they're getting warmed up, I mean, you know, they're just.
That 7,300 number goes perfectly with the conversation you were having on the air yesterday about they obviously seem to know where some of these illegal alien suspects are. The Biden administration had no compulsion to go after them. The Trump administration does.
Well, that's my question. Yeah. These Venezuelan gang members, they were in the news. Remember, these are the guys who took over the apartment.
They were certainly known.
In Denver.
Yeah.
Okay? This is the same gang. Same people.
This is Aurora, Colorado, I think
so,
is what you're talking about.
Aurora, Colorado. You're correct. And so they were known, and where they hang out was known, and what they were doing was known. Before Trump came to office. So why didn't ICE arrest them? Why weren't they in custody? Why weren't they deported before?
Yeah,
and the answer is because
they were neutered by the Biden administration.
Biden administration didn't really want to.
All right. One final note. Yeah. This is a DeepSeek, the Chinese AI thing that we're learning about this week. DeepSeek explained in an analogy about a 1970s Hollywood actor love triangle. Are you ready? This I came across on Charles Payne's social media feed from Fox Business.
Can't wait to hear this. Okay.
It starts with a post by a guy saying, China is creating a new robot that can babysit your kids, protect your wife while you're away, and listen to all your most personal secrets. Get this, it's cheaper and faster than anything you're doing or using right now. Get out of here. Charles Payne retweeted that and said, that's what Ryan O'Neill told Lee Majors when he urged him to go away for a few months to make a movie. I'll look in on Farrah Fawcett for you.
Yes.
I'm done.
Okay. Oh, man, I had forgotten all about that. That was such a huge scandal back in the day. Yeah. Anyway, 31 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, when we come back, we're going to take it local here on the Commute with Carlson. It's a busy program, state, local, and national this morning on the John Carlson Show. Good morning. We're back on the John Carlson Show. Good morning. So as you know, Washington State's capital and the U.S. Capitol are almost photostatic negative images of the other. The Republicans control the executive branch and both houses of Congress in Washington, President Trump in the White House, the Republicans with a respectable majority, 53-47 in the Senate, and a much tighter majority in the House, 220-215. While in the Washington State capital of Olympia, you have your executive branch controlled by, of course, Governor Bob Ferguson, and the Democrats with a commanding majority in the House, 59-39. We talked about that yesterday. And in the state Senate, it's 30-19 Democrat. So I'm guessing that maybe the voters wanted to give Democrats a mandate to move Washington to the left. But polls that have come out from moderate mainstream pollsters, conservative mainstream pollsters, are showing that people are in Washington State are kind of grouchy about state government. That while a majority of Washington State voters think things are going to get better for themselves, and pluralities think that things will get better in their community in 2025, and even though they voted against Donald Trump, a plurality believes things will get better in the country. A strong majority, 51-36%, the rest undecided, 51-36% say things will get worse in Washington State. They approve of Bob Ferguson, very mixed reviews for the legislature. And in terms of taxes, you know, the Democrats think they have a mandate to raise taxes. Remember the memo that went out? Hey, we get to choose which taxes we want to raise and how high. That's not how the people of Washington State are feeling at all. This is a poll just out from Project 42, the Neapolitan News Service survey. Quote, generally speaking, are taxes in Washington State too high or too low? The percentage who say they're too high? 78%. 1% think they are either somewhat too low or much too low. Only 19% say, yeah, they're about right. So again, 78% say taxes are too high. And then the follow-up question, what about the taxes you and your household personally pay? Are they too high or too low? 76% too high. 2% too low. So the Republican response to whatever tax the Democrats try and levy, any tax on, you know, they'll say, don't worry, it's only the rich. The Republican response should say, no new taxes, period. That needs to be their mantra. No new taxes, period. If you say, the rich need to pay their fair share, then offset the tax on the wealthy, you know, you raise capital gains or whatever, offset that with reductions in taxes paid proportionately by working class and poor people, you know, like gas taxes or carbon taxes or sales taxes or license tab fees. Any increase in taxes on the wealthy should be augmented by a reduction in one of those taxes. So that's kind of an eye-opening reality. That's why when I spoke to the Roanoke Conference, I said, you understand the mood of the public is leaning in a conservative direction now, not a liberal one. Here's another question. Is it possible to balance the state budget by simply eliminating wasteful spending? Yes, says 61%. No, says 18%. That's a 3-to-1 ratio. Another 20%, not sure. The legislature is thinking of passing what's called a RUC. That's a road usage charge. That means they would basically tax you per mile driven. They say, we need this because the gas tax is inefficient. People with hybrids or electric cars aren't paying their fair share. And I guarantee you there are people who, instead of replacing the gas tax with a road usage charge, they would just prefer to have one of each. But anyway, the legislature is considering a new tax on every mile driven by cars. This could be in addition to, not a replacement for, the gas tax. Would you favor or oppose this new per-mile tax? 17% favor. 79% oppose. 79% oppose. So the people of Washington State don't want new taxes. And the Democrats are trying to pitch that, and they're also trying to push this ruck tax that I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, that was also known as the pay-per-mile scheme, right?
Pay-per-mile.
RUC, road usage
road
charge.
Road usage per mile. The Democrats say they have a mandate to raise taxes because there were four initiatives, three of which would have reduced taxes. Reduced taxes on long-term care, reduced the carbon tax, which very confusing how this was explained, and the campaign against it effortlessly, casually lied about it, and heavily outspent the supporters of the initiative. Anyway, there was the carbon tax would have come down, meaning your gas prices would have come down. You would have seen the long-term care tax come down. And the capital gains tax would have come down. Well, those three initiatives failed for a number of reasons. The Democrats took it as a mandate to raise taxes. So the pollster asked the following question. Last summer, the legislature... This asks if they want to repeal the initiatives that the legislature already passed into law. But asking, do you believe that the rejection of these three initiatives that would have reduced taxes is a mandate to raise more taxes? The public came down with a thumping denunciation. No, that is not how we feel. 76% say that the rejection of ballot initiatives that would have repealed or lowered taxes should not be seen by legislators as implicit approval for raising other taxes. Only 13% say it is reasonable to interpret the rejection of those initiatives as a mandate to raise taxes. So, there you have it. That is how Washington State is failing. Now, there is one proposed expenditure that would actually benefit me and Philip J. and the radio legend.
Oh, is this what we talked about off the air after the show yesterday? Okay, go ahead.
And we're going to be talking about it in just a minute here on the air. Money for nothing.
You really think we'd qualify?
Well, I'm going to read you the criteria by which we explicitly qualify.
Okay.
I can't wait. So, you're going to make me wait?
It's coming up on the Commute with Carlson, our legendary lyric contest, underway right now. Here's your legendary lyric. When you hear it, be the 10th caller, 206-421-5757. Drive-in movies, comic books, and blue jeans. Howdy doody, baseball cards, and birthdays. Where have you heard that lyric? I guarantee you have many, many, many times before. No, that's not it. But you will hear it sometime within the next 90 minutes on the John Carlson Show.
Thank you, Bob. But I got to do a show here, ladies and gentlemen. It's Lay, Lady, Lay, one of Bob Dylan's classic hits. Check out that movie about him, by the way.
Yeah, it's already on TV, too, streaming.
It's streaming. It's worth seeing.
So you've seen it. I don't know anybody.
Timothée Chalamet. It's a great, great movie.
Carlson Cinema Review.
And has the added virtue of being true in most respects.
Right, yeah.
So not a lot of hagiography there. It's actually on point. And I love Monica Barbaro as Joan Baez.
I love Monica Barbaro much more than Joan Baez. Yeah. She was in Top Gun Maverick. She was Phoenix, the fighter pilot. Okay. Senate Bill 5400, an act relating to supporting local news journalism. And it's got a bunch of sponsors, all of them Democrats. It establishes something called the Washington Local News Journalism Corps and requires $20 million of a business and occupation tax surcharge on high-tech companies. So, again, a surcharge on the B&O tax that high-tech companies pay requires $20 million of that money to be used to support grants to local media. I said, well, local media? What does that entail? Quote, an eligible broadcaster, and then they have eligible publishers and news journalists, but an eligible broadcaster is a person who operates under a broadcast license, that's us, engages in creating, editing, producing original content concerning local or regional matters of public interest. Obviously, we do that. Conducting interviews, analyzing documents and other information. We certainly do that.
Yes, we do.
That we update our content on at least a weekly basis. Well, we update our content sometimes hourly, you know, and certainly every day. We use an editorial process for error correction. Yes, we blame other people when that happens. It's a very good process. No, and besides, since when do we make errors here on the John Carlson Show? Well, actually, every once in a while we do. We always correct them. Anyway, we could be eligible for a grant like this.
And it's all taxpayer money funded.
And I say, no, thank you, for the very reason Philip J. just said. It's taxpayer funded.
Although, specifically, it would come from a tax on big tech.
Yeah. But taxpayers should not be paying for news media, period. It's 3 minutes after 7 o'clock, hour number two, the John Carlson Show, Wednesday edition of the radio program of record, this 29th day of January. And you know what happens on Wednesday, don't you? It's our legendary lyric contest where I read you lyrics from a classic song. And when I do, you be the 10th caller at 206-421-5757. And there's a little goodie for you.
Yeah, we'll call these guys legendary. They've been around about as long as I've been doing radio, John. It's been a long time. Since 1980 or so, Daniel's brother, four locations to serve you when it comes to USDA choice beef. You want a steakhouse, you can call a steakhouse. Or seafood hangout, that's Tops. Or maybe you want to go for some chicken. And they've also got their selection of high-end spirits, which they put their label on. Always a sellout, in fact, about around the holidays. Four locations for you. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, South Lake Union. You got a $50 gift card here. Dine-in, takeout. Don't forget, online reservations available. Makes it so simple at danielsbroiler.com.
And by the way, this song actually was out before the Schwartz brothers got together and started Daniels. So it is an oldie but a goodie. I will give you this hint. It is from the 70s. This is your lyric. When you hear it going into or coming back from commercial break, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. Here we go. Drive-in movies, comic books and blue jeans, howdy doody, baseball cards and birthdays. There is your lyric. When you hear it, do you think you know it? I guarantee you've heard it many, many, many times. Be caller number 10. Okay, let us start local, this portion of the John Carlson Show. I had mentioned last hour that anti-tax sentiment in Washington, despite the fact that Bob Ferguson was elected governor by a clear majority and that Democrats have a decisive commanding majorities in both houses of Olympia, voters don't want taxes going up any more than they have already.
We're only a couple of weeks into the legislative session, and already the lines have been drawn, with Governor Bob Ferguson suggesting $4 billion in budget cuts, while his state and House legislative colleagues are suggesting raising new taxes with trial balloons after the state has wasted away a budget surplus.
So we're building out EV fast charging infrastructure all over the country.
Quincy Lee has a business that has been revving up.
I founded the company to, you know, decarbonize and electrify transportation, and that's our daily mission.
But he worries his Soto-based Electric Era Technologies, with close to 40 employees, is facing some negative energy in Olympia.
This is to, you know, help the state cover up some of the excessive spending that they've had over the last couple of years. But at the end of the day, those taxes are detrimental to small businesses like ours.
State lawmakers are considering multiple bills to close a multi-billion dollar budget gap.
Record revenue, record-breaking spending.
That a business-friendly group called Enterprise Washington is countering with new data in the form of a website launched during this past weekend's football games to provide nonpartisan data straight from state departments to make the claim the state wasted away the rainy day fund in 2021 and a $14 billion surplus, adding $8 billion to the budget in 2023 and $2 billion more in 2024.
Usually aren't the circumstances where you get a budget deficit, but over the last 4 years, the state has increased spending by 40%.
That's 6% across the board. You're going to save about $4 billion.
I was honestly super happy to hear that from Governor Ferguson.
Lee is asking for financial restraint.
Excessive high taxes ultimately make their way to the consumer.
To keep the engine going for his business and the rest of the state.
All right. Good report from Chris Daniels. That voice you heard at the very beginning, that's Paul Graves. Paul's a former state House member, former legislator from Issaquah. And he's going to be on our show here in an hour. He is going to be explaining what this is all about, this ad campaign. And I think he's doing it just right. People are instinctively feeling it's not really necessary to raise taxes. Taxes have been going up too much already. They may not be in a tax revolt mood, but they are in a no new taxes frame of mind. And what Paul Graves is doing here with Enterprise Washington is he's supplying the arguments that make people feel comfortable with that position. He said, yeah, spending's gone through the roof. Spending has gone 40% over and above the inflation rate these past 10 years. So it's not 40% over 10 years, it's 40% over inflation. So he lays out the numbers using the state's own figures. That's wise. He's running these spots not on Fox or not on MSNBC. He's running them when mainstream regular folks who kind of sort of sometimes pay attention to politics, when they might be paying attention. You know, they're like watching football games, for instance. So this is smart. This is good. And he's going to join us and tell us a little bit more. So stay tuned. He'll be with us in less than an hour on the John Carlson Show. By the way, if you have any comments, if you have anything you want to get off your chest, our text line is open for you. That's 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. All right. A lot of other things that are in the news. Did you hear Stephen Miller from the White House? Toggle back to what's happening in Washington, D.C. Did you hear what he had to say to Jake Tapper about illegal immigration? Let's just put it this way. When the topic is illegal immigration, and most anything else that Stephen Miller talks about, he knows what he's talking about. He's not going to lose debates or arguments. Listen to how he deals with Jake Tapper here on illegal immigration. He's standing in front of the White House while Jake Tapper is back in the CNN studios.
Let's say that an illegal alien.
This, of course, is we start with Stephen Miller.
Arrived in the last 3 months of the Biden administration.
He starts off by saying, let's say somebody arrives in the last 6 months of the Biden administration illegally.
From, say, Peru. He was released. He failed to appear in immigration court. He was issued a final removal order. So showed up, got released, didn't appear, ordered deported. Been here for 6 months. Is it your position, Jake, that that guy should get to stay till the end of his life? I mean, what kind of country can run that way?
Okay.
I mean, no country in the world runs that way.
But the illegal alien activists, the illegal alien social service providers, the illegal alien lobby, which calls itself the immigration reform lobby, they don't have a problem with that. With someone who, and I think he laid it out, perfectly.
Let's say that an illegal alien arrived in the last 3 months of the Biden administration from, say, Peru. He was released. He failed to appear in immigration court. He was issued a final removal order. So showed up, got released, didn't appear, ordered deported. Been here for 6 months. Is it your position, Jake, that that guy should get to stay till the end of his life?
The answer from the illegal alien lobby is yes, he should. Because it would be divisive to deport him. It would create fear in our immigrant communities. Not our legal immigrant communities, it wouldn't. That is their position. That is not the position of the American people, and it is not the position of the Trump administration. It was the position of the Biden administration. So Tapper then asks about, okay, let's talk about the impact to non-illegal aliens. Let's talk about the impact on the lives of American citizens and legal immigrants if illegals disappeared.
The Department of Agriculture says that between 2020 and 2022, 42% of crop workers were undocumented immigrants. And in many cases, as you know, these migrants do jobs many Americans do not want to do. So how does President Trump make sure that the effort to deport people who are not in this country legally doesn't end up hurting Americans who want safe borders, absolutely, but also don't want to see even more higher prices in groceries?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not your position, Jake, you're just asking the question, that we should supply America's food with exploitative illegal alien labor. I obviously don't think that's what you're implying.
That was wonderful.
Only 1% of alien workers in the entire country work in agriculture. The top destination for illegal aliens are large cities like New York, like Los Angeles.
Okay, so you're probably saying, wait a minute, 42% versus 1%. What's going on here? They're talking about different things. Jake Tapper said that Department of Agriculture study indicates that 42% of people in the crop picking industry are here illegally. What Stephen Miller's talking about is only 1% of all the illegals pouring over the border have any interest in doing agriculture work. The overwhelming majority do not. And they don't work the fields. They're not picking apples. They're not harvesting. Only 1% of people who are in the country illegally are doing that kind of work. And by the way, I want to start with the first part of what Jake Tapper said here. Listen carefully to this.
The Department of Agriculture says that between 2020 and 2022, 42% of crop workers were undocumented immigrants. And in many cases, as you know, these migrants do jobs many Americans do not want to do.
Well, wait a minute. If 42% of the people picking the crops are here illegally, that means 58% of the people picking the crops are here legally. They're either guest workers or they're young Americans. So who says they're doing work Americans won't do? The clear majority, the vast majority of people picking the crops are not here illegally. So he's kind of contradicting himself there a little bit, isn't he? Anyway, let's get to Miller, Stephen Miller and Jake Tapper's final exchange here.
The illegal aliens that Joe Biden brought into our country are not full stop doing farm work. They are not. The illegal aliens he brought in from Venezuela, from Haiti, from Nicaragua, they are not doing farm work. They are in our cities collecting welfare. As for the farmers, there is a guest worker program that President Trump supports. Over time as well, we will transition into automation, so we'll never have to have this conversation ever again. But there's no universe in which this nation is going to allow the previous president to flood our nation with millions and millions of illegal aliens who just get to stay here. And we are especially not going to allow a subset of those illegal aliens to rape and murder our citizens. So we are going to unapologetically enforce our immigration laws. And as I'm sure you will celebrate, we are going to unleash the power and might of the U.S. government to eradicate the presence of transnational threats on our soil.
I love Stephen Miller. I mean, when you've got Stephen Miller as the top domestic policy advisor to Donald Trump, which is what he does, that's Stephen Miller's position. When you have him with Trump's ear and you got Tom Homan out in the field leading these ICE raids, tell me we're not going to solve this problem. Tell me we're not going to prevail and finally start reversing these numbers of people in this country illegally. I mean, that was wonderful. And, you know, it's they've got the support of people on the ground. The elites in academia, government, media, they're still stuck with the open borders. Now, they're trying to do damage control while retaining as much support for the concept of open borders as possible. But it's getting hard to do it because people who live in these communities in blue cities and blue states are saying, enough, we can't take this. We do have a problem with crime. We do have a problem with the neighborhood going to hell. We do have a problem with schools being inundated with kids who don't speak the language. We do have a problem with social services being overwhelmed. So it's getting harder for them to maintain this. So their strategy is to create as much hysteria and fear as possible. And we've seen that with several press conferences in just the last week here in the Seattle area about, oh, we need to alert our schools that we don't want immigration authorities going into our schools. We don't want them in our churches. We need to have clear and fast rules. We will not cooperate with ICE. And Tom Homan's, again, they're not doing that for legal purposes or policy purposes. Tom Homan's already made it clear. We're prioritizing threats to this country and violent criminals. And we're going to go get them wherever they are. Now, you can help us by letting us know when they're in jail and they're about to be released so we can just pick them up. But if you don't, we know where they live. We know where they hang out. We are going to get them. And if we have to go into a school to get a 16-year-old gang member, we will. And if we have to go into a church where they're hiding among others, we will. We're not going to be deterred. There is no safe haven for violent violent illegal immigrants, period. But that is what the left is doing, trying to create as much panic among illegals as possible. And that's all they got left. That's all they have left to do. That's all they can do. They're not going to prevail. It's 21 minutes now after 7 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III is standing by with the social media sweep. It's a busy morning, as you can tell, on the John Carlson Show. Good morning. Yeah, we got our winner. That's KVI listener Dave from the pleasant little town of Algona. Of course, he immediately spotlighted Hurt when he heard that song from Chicago, Peter Cetera, during their glory days in the 70s.
Going in the break, you heard that song, everybody? Yeah, that was
1975,
it.
Old Days mm-hmm. by Chicago. 1975 hit written by James Pankow,
yeah,
their trombone player.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was just written by him celebrating nostalgia and his childhood. It hit number five. Top five hit for Chicago. They performed it live, eventually stopped. Peter Cetera didn't like the song anymore. Thought the lyrics were corny.
But it hit.
The nostalgia grows.
The man that made it fame here with albums of Roman numerals. Quick mention, first time Chicago came to town, they played the Armory. You know it as the Food Circus, the Center House.
Yes.
They were the opening act for Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, boy. Wow. Oh, boy.
There's twin
bill. Can you imagine?
Some of those guys are still out there playing.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
And, of course, the building next door, the Jimi Hendrix kind of museum.
Yes.
You know, the EMP, now Mopop.
Mopop.
Yeah.
All right. I'm ready for Mo Social Media from Philip J.
Oh, man. Fox 13 Seattle posted a story that was conducted at kind of an examination of the cost of living for Seattle. And Seattle came in as the third most expensive city in the country for middle-class families to afford basic necessities. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. The study, or I guess the ranking, comes from an outfit called Upgraded Points. So I don't know if this is like a consumer news sort of thing. It sounds like the way you get bonuses off your credit cards and things like that for upgraded points. And it says in the Seattle Metro, necessities will cost an estimated $127,000 a year. So that's your housing, your food, your schooling, your child care, your transportation, your health care, and associated expenses. So what they're calling necessities. And with a median income of $188,000 in the city of Seattle, that ranks it third most expensive. And some of the other rankings here, San Jose, California would be number one. Washington, D.C. is ranked number two most expensive for middle class, again, for middle class families. So more examples of how expensive it is, cost of living is. The new study has been released ranking which city's middle-class families can stretch their dollar. Seattle ranks third on the list. Middle-class families would need $127,000, a little bit more than that, every year to afford basic necessities in Seattle, according to this compilation by the outfit Upgraded Points. So more proof. Now, we hear about, you know, the big earthquake from time to time, and we need to be prepared for the big earthquake. Do either of you, Mark or John, have an idea of which volcano would be most likely to erupt in the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest?
Right now?
I'm going to predict.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Glacier Peak.
Negative.
I'll say Rainier.
Negative. So it's actually
we're down to three.
Bit
it's
of
either
a,
Adams, St. Helens, it's or
gonna be,
Baker.
It's gonna
trick
be Baker.
Question.
It's going to be Baker. Okay.
But it's an underwater volcano off the coast of Oregon.
Well,
about 480 kilometers.
That's not Washington.
Off the coast of, I said in the Pacific Northwest. I said in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, it's under the Pacific Northwest. Aha.
So, and this story comes by way of MSN.com.
All right.
But it says a mile-wide volcano could erupt off the U.S. coast this year, scientists say. So we'll see if they get accurate with this or not. But
now, what would happen if an underground volcano erupted?
Well, I'm rolling tape so I can document this.
I was going to say.
If it happens this year, we'll say Phil was first.
I mean, there's an underwater volcano off the coast of the Big Island, Hawaii, that they feel like in a few more decades will start to create its own island because it's that close to the surface. I don't think that that's the case for this one. This is called Axial Seamount, lies 480 kilometers off the coast of Oregon, and has previously erupted three times, 1998, 2015, and 2011. So it's got some recent activity there.
It does.
And Coin TV interviewed somebody about this. One of the seismologists said, because it's had these three eruptions in the last 30 years, that's why we call it the most active volcano in the Pacific Northwest, because most of the ones on land just aren't active that frequently, and they spend a lot of their time slumbering, whereas Axial has a pretty active magma supply. So we'll see if anything more comes about this. In 2014, researchers connected monitoring gear to an undersea cable that for the first time allowed them to gather live data at the Axial Seamount, whose peak is about 4,900 feet below the surface of the Pacific Ocean. But now you know about the most active volcano in the Northwest.
Well, and you got to wonder what the fishing is like around there. Probably not so great.
You still got 4,900 feet between the volcano and the surface, though. It's a decent amount of area to work with.
31 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, the commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. 23 minutes now to 8 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show. I absolutely love this incredibly unique idea. As you know, people are usually the major expense for a company, an organization, a government. You got to pay your employees. And the federal payroll is significant, obviously. The Trump administration would like to reduce the number of federal employees. But you don't want to have a reduction in force, a RIF, if you can avoid it. So the Trump administration is doing something that you see a lot in the corporate world, but I don't recall seeing this in government, not at the local level, not at the state level, and not at the federal level. Now, if I'm incorrect here, I would love to be corrected, but I don't think this has happened before. Donald Trump is offering buyouts to members of the federal workforce. Employees who resign will get full pay, full benefits through September. Full pay, full benefits, and you don't have to do anything. It's an early buyout. This happens, again, from time to time in corporations. The only areas of the federal workforce that are not included are the military, the post office, national security personnel, and immigration enforcement. Everybody else just got a potential golden parachute. Well, gold-plated parachute, okay? I mean, it's not like some of these massive golden parachutes you see in the corporate world. But, hey, I bet you'd like that for where you work. I bet you'd like the choice. So here's how it works. The U.S. Office of Personnel, it's called OPM, has just sent a letter out to all federal employees. The letter says that they have from January 28th, so as from yesterday until February 6th, so they got a week to decide would you like to retire early? Or maybe just leave your job. Let's say you've been a federal employee for 3 years. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, you like it. The hours are steady. The pay's pretty good. But it's not really what you want to spend your life doing. Well, here you go. This is your chance to take an early exit. 8 months pay. 8 months benefits. So your health care plan stays in place. It means you've got 8 months to find another job. Or maybe you want to take 2 or 3 months off and then spend half a year looking for a better job. Okay. During the first week of his administration, President Trump issued a number of directives that would affect federal employment. You recall his executive order requiring employees to return to work in person. He is making it easier to replace senior career executives. And he is taking DEI out of the federal workforce. From now on, employment and promotions will be decided based on merit, not on race, not on gender, not on your sexual orientation. So, with this new reality in place, people have to determine, they have to decide whether they want to leave or not. Now, here's the letter. It's not very long, but every federal employee got one of these in their online mailbox. Deferred resignation letter, January 28th, 2025. Please accept this letter. This is a letter that they receive and would respond back, indicating that they are willing to leave. The letter from the federal government to them says, if you choose to remain in your current position, we thank you for your renewed focus on serving the American people to the best of your abilities and look forward to working together as part of an improved federal workforce. At this time, we cannot give you full assurance regarding the certainty of your position or agency, but should your position be eliminated, you will be treated with dignity and afforded the protections in place for such positions. If you choose not to continue in your current role in the federal workforce, we thank you for your service to your country, and you will be provided with a dignified, fair departure from the federal government utilizing a deferred resignation program. This program begins effective January 28th and is available to all federal employees, with the exceptions that I mentioned to you a moment ago, until February 6th. If you resign under this program, you will retain all pay and benefits regardless of your daily workload. You will be exempted from all applicable in-person work requirements until September 30th, 2025. Or earlier if you choose to accelerate your resignation for any reason. The details of the separation plan can be found below. Whatever path you choose, we thank you for your service to the United States of America. The headline, if you will, is entitled Fork in the Road. In other words, you've been on a path. Now there's a fork in the road. You can stay on that path, keep working for the federal government, or you can choose this new way, which is between now and October, If you wish to leave federal employment, you can, and you get full pay and benefits until October. From now to the end of September. All you had to do was reply, yes, that you would like to leave. And this is the separation letter. Please accept this letter as my formal resignation from employment with my existing agency effective September 30th, 2025. So that's, we're talking 8 full months. I understand that I have the right to accelerate but not extend my resignation date if I wish to take advantage of the deferred resignation program. I also understand that if I become eligible for early or normal retirement before my resignation date, that I retain the right to elect early or normal retirement once eligible at any point prior to my resignation date. I am certain of my decision to resign, and my choice to resign is fully voluntary. I understand my employing agency will likely make adjustments in response to my resignation, including moving, eliminating, consolidating, reassigning my position and tasks, reducing my official duties, and or placing me on administrative leave until my resignation date. Upon submission of your resignation, you will receive a confirmation email acknowledging receipt of your email. Any replies to this email should be for the exclusive use of accepting the deferred resignation letter. Any other replies to this emails will not be reviewed, forwarded, or retained. So basically, they're saying, not only can you leave and get 8 months' pay, we're going to make it real simple. Just respond, yes. This is the deferred resignation letter. These are the understandings. Simple, clear, fair, generous, and final. I am so glad they are doing this. If you want to reduce the size of the federal workforce by, say, 10%, I'm guessing this is a pretty good way to start, pretty good way to get there. So much more preferable than something really disruptive like, a reduction in force across the board or, layoffs, terminations, things like that. Always start with incentives when you can.
Today's day and age and jobs and departures and how fast we've seen our radio jobs go, John? Mm-hmm. Wow, that's not a bad idea.
No, everyone I know in the radio world say, wow! Yes, absolutely. It's Boeing time. You know what that means? 747, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We're back on the John Carlson Show, 7 minutes to 8 o'clock. I love this hit, J.D. Vance on birthright citizenship. We played part of it yesterday, but I want you to hear this mic drop moment from his interview with Margaret Brennan from Face the Nation on Sunday.
There are 5 legal challenges already to one of the other immigration actions, the order on birthright citizenship. A federal judge appointed by Ronald Reagan, I think you'd agree, has some conservative credentials,
sure.
Paused the order to end birthright citizenship, calling it blatantly unconstitutional. How do you reconcile this challenge to the 14th Amendment to the Constitution?
So I obviously disagree with that judge, and these things, some of them will be litigated. That's the nature of our constitutional system. But here's the basic idea of President Trump's view on this. If you are a lawful permanent resident or a legal immigrant who plans to stay, your children, of course, should become American citizens. But let's say you're the child of an ambassador. You don't become...
But that's not part of it.
Well, that is an important principle. But we're saying that that carve-out should apply to anybody who doesn't plan to stay here. If you come here on vacation and you have a baby in an American hospital, that baby doesn't become an American citizen. If you're an illegal alien and you come here temporarily, hopefully, your child does not become an American citizen by virtue of just having been born on American soil. It's a very basic principle in American immigration law that if you want to become an American citizen and you've done it the right way, And the American people and their collective mm-hmm. wisdom have welcomed you into our national community. Then you become a citizen. But temporary residents, people who come in here, whether legally or illegally, and don't plan to stay, yep. their children shouldn't become American citizens. I don't know any country that does that or why we would be different.
Well, this is a country founded by immigrants.
Well, this is a country
founded
by... This is
a unique country.
This is a very unique country, and it was founded by some immigrants and some settlers. But just because we were founded by immigrants doesn't mean that 240 years later that we have to have the dumbest immigration policy in the world. No country
Boom.
Says that temporary visitors, their children, will be given complete access to the benefits and blessings of American citizenship. America should actually look out for the interests of our citizens first. And that means, again, if you're here permanently mm-hmm. and lawfully, your kid becomes an American citizen. If you're not here permanently, if you're not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States yeah. and don't plan to be, why would we make those people's children American citizens permanently?
Very reasonable. And that is what they want the Supreme Court to grapple with. They've never ruled on something like this before. All right. It's 56 minutes after 7, hour number 3 of the commute straight ahead. 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much for being with me, letting me be part of your listening day. We stay on top of everything. You know, I was watching a football game over the weekend, and lo and behold, here is an ad that is spotlighting how Washington State says they're in a deficit, but actually... there's a lot more revenue coming in than there had been before, than they have for the previous 2-year budget cycle. And how poor are we, really? You keep hearing deficit, deficit, deficit. Are we really facing a fiscal emergency? The website budgetbreakdown.org suggests, no, not really.
Washington has a $10 to $12 billion shortfall, but how does this affect you? The state budget may not seem like something that impacts your daily life, but from the roads you drive on, the schools your kids attend, and the price to fill up your gas tank along the way, there's a connection to the state budget. And there are many more. From public safety to homeless services and cleanup. One way to evaluate state spending is to break it down to the per person amount spent in a 2-year budget cycle, adjusted for inflation. A decade ago, the state spent $6,000 per capita, or $24,000 per family of four. But state spending has more than doubled since then, fueled by a booming economy and more than 50 new taxes. That means the state now spends $9,000 per person, or $36,000 for a family of four. While Washington is collecting record-high taxes, the record-breaking spending exceeds it. To learn more about the state budget and see a detailed breakdown of the choices along the way, visit budgetbreakdown.org.
Or we can talk to the guy who's behind it all, and that is former Issaquah, that's 5th the Legislative District, former Issaquah State Representative Paul Graves, who heads Enterprise Washington. Good morning, Paul Graves. How are you?
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am doing well. And you debuted this, I think, during the football games over the weekend, didn't you? Is that when these ads began to appear?
That's exactly right. They've also been running on, you know, the digital spaces as well. But we ran several of those ads during the conference championship games, and we're really pleased with the impact.
The website again is budgetbreakdown.org. Budgetbreakdown.org. Just that simple. Washington state spending, how it has grown. Taxes, how they have grown, and you make up your own mind. You say, because I think this is a brilliant way to go about this, Paul. What you're doing is you're assuming that most people are already thinking, you know, I don't think we need to raise taxes. I, you know, feel it in my gut. I just, you know, taxes have been going up. Spending seems to be going up, too. I just don't see the need for it. And you're laying out the case. No, there really isn't the justification for it.
Well, this is a purely public education effort. People can take whatever views they want, but we wanted to make sure they had the facts because it could be a little hard to figure right now. Again, you have public officials saying we're in a budget crisis, that we're going to be $10 or maybe $14 billion short over the next couple of years. But it's hard to square with the fact that in the last 4 years, state taxes are up 25%. They have 25% more money than they did just 4 years ago. The economy is strong. We're not in a recession. And it's pretty hard to try to square all that. So we thought at the very least that we wanted to make sure that people had all the facts. Again, if you go to that website, that thank you for saying the name several times, budgetbreakdown.org, you'll see that it simply presents facts. You know, we're not taking a particular position on any taxing or spending proposal, but everything in there, we've got links exactly to the governor's budget office, to the state revenue forecast council.
Well, that's the other thing.
You can go look yourself.
You're using the government's own numbers to say, here's how much the government has been spending. Here are the number of taxes that have gone up, and letting people make up their own minds from there. I think that that's another wise tactic, is that people want to make up their own mind. They don't want to be told how to think. And you pointed out Washington is on track to collect $10 billion more in tax revenue over the next 4 years. Spending is set to rise $22 billion over the next 4 years. And you don't need to say that's clearly unsustainable, because anyone who passed fifth grade math can look at that and say it's not sustainable.
And I'll add too, I mean, if you look back over the last 10 years, for example, the average household has seen its income go up by 59%. The state has actually almost exactly doubled its tax money. It's up 99%. But state spending is up 114%. And again, just in the last 4 years, tax revenue is up 25%, but spending is up 40%. People can take all kinds of positions with all of that. We just wanted to make sure everybody had the facts that had them really easy to get to. Because again, it seemed like there's a lot of confusion around the state budget and the state spending and state taxes. And it's especially hard to try to go get the actual facts. They're not really compiled anywhere. So it was a pretty big effort.
You really did this right. As someone who used to do these reports when I was running Washington Policy Center in the early days, the 80s and 90s, this is the kind of thing we tried to impress upon people. And then, of course, yep. We went a step further. We said, now here's 40 ways to reduce unnecessary spending. But your graphs here are very simple. I love it. Household income, how it has risen over 10 years. State tax revenue, how it has risen over the last 10 years. And then state spending, the state budget, the general fund budget, how it has grown over the last 10 years. And this is where you see a very troubling trend. Household income over 10 years up 55%. State spending up 114%, over twice the growth in the state budget as the average household, Paul.
That's exactly right. At the end of the day, we want to see Washington grow and thrive. And there's a lot of things that go into that. One of them is having an educated population, having people who really have a grasp of the state budget, how it works, how we got here, and especially how it affects your pocketbook. Because I don't think I need to tell your listeners again, but this is one of the highest cost of living states in the country.
Yeah.
From gas to groceries, childcare to to, you know, just about everything.
Well, how about a home?
Measure, oh yeah, to home ownership. All of those
and rent.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and rent. They're all much higher, and that those are caused by a lot of things. But the decisions that come out of Olympia certainly affect those as well. And so we want people to understand how that all kind of works together, and especially again to have it all in one easy to find place, so you can go and look through the things. And I mean, by all means, check our math and look at the reports yourselves and draw the conclusions that you can from them. But more than anything else, we wanted to make sure that we have an educated population in the state.
Well, again, the website is budgetbreakdown.org, budgetbreakdown.org. Paul Graves is a former legislator from the 5th District in Issaquah, Sammamish. He had a wonderful campaign slogan, one of my favorite of all time. I dig graves. And
the problem is when you wear a shirt with that on the back and you're knocking on doors in your neighborhood, people stop and think that you're trying to sell cemetery services.
Well, I tell you, I think that the way you've laid this out for people is admirable. Because we live in an era now where people just tend to get very loud and tell people what they should think and hit them over the head and get very ad hominem about the opposition and everything else. And what you're saying is, hey, can we just look at the numbers? We'll use the government's numbers. Okay, here's how much spending, here's how much more tax revenue we have than we did 10 years ago. And here's how spending has outpaced the amount of revenue that's come in. And here's how it has outpaced inflation. And here's how it's outpaced household income growth. You're looking at it from several different angles. It's very useful. And again, I want our listeners to check it out, budgetbreakdown.org. Now, I want to ask you about something interesting.
Sure.
Crosscut had a poll. This is the Crosscut PBS Elway poll, where they were asking people if they're feeling good that 2025 things are going to get better than they've been. And they asked that about, do you think things will get better for you and your household than in 2025? And a clear majority of people said, yes, things are going to get better. Then they said, will things get better in your community? And a plurality was much more closely divided, but a plurality said, no, things will get better in my community. Said, what about our country? Do you think things are going to get better in our country? And even though Donald Trump lost Washington State by 18 percentage points, a plurality of people said they thought things would get better in our country. But when they asked about Washington State, 36% said they thought things would get better. 51% said things will get likely worse. And Stuart Elway, the pollster, said that you very, very rarely see people more pessimistic about the state than, say, the country or their own circumstances. That's very unusual. Why do you think that is, Paul?
Gosh, you have a lot of theories on that. And it's a real shame, too, because there are, if you want to point to things to be optimistic about, I mean, we do have a strong economy. We have two of the five biggest companies in the entire world headquartered right here. We've got these mountains and these oceans and all these beautiful things that draw and attract so many people here. I mean, there's kind of fewer things to point to other than the government itself and the way the government is run. And perhaps it gives you hope that it's still an optimistic people and that there are still things that we can do. And maybe you have the hope that, you know, if things can change, that you could see people being optimistic about the state as well. That's certainly my hope. And again, I think one thing that goes into that is having a population in the state that has a real understanding of its state budget and its state taxes and how it all works together. So hopefully this is at least a little piece of the puzzle of getting those numbers to the right.
Let me tell you my theory, because this is very unusual for people to feel more pessimistic about their state than, especially in a Democratic state where the Democratic legislature, you would think that they'd be positive, but they're more down on Washington State than they are about the whether the country, things will get better in the country. I think it's because issues that people see up close and personal at street level, crime, drugs, homelessness and overdose deaths. They see these things up close. They see the government spending a lot of money. And they see these things getting worse. And so a sense of pessimism has developed. And I think they're beginning to sense that even though they voted for him, this legislature seems to have very different attitudes about taxes and spending than they do. Final word, Paul Graves.
I like that theory. Again, my hope is that we can get to a place where we can feel optimistic about our direction in the state. And, part of that is making sure that everybody understands how their budget works. I think, it's a small piece of the puzzle, but it is an important one, which is why we're doing this. So again, budgetbreakdown.org. Check it out for yourself.
Yeah.
Take a look, see the numbers for yourself, and go decide as you will.
And again, I tell all KVI listeners, when I see something, a really great resource information, you've got to check this out. Folks, you got to check this out. Budgetbreakdown.org just lays out the numbers using the government's own data. And it is very persuasive, very thorough, very measured and even-handed. And yet it tells a very clear story. Budgetbreakdown.org. Paul Graves, it was good to see you at Roanoke, by the way, and it's good to hear your voice this morning.
Always good to see and talk with you too, John.
You got it. That's Paul Graves from Enterprise Washington, the driving force behind budgetbreakdown.com. I will simply tell you this. I don't think any reasonable person, because most people don't follow politics like you do, like I do. They're not as informed about politics as you are and I am. They're not as interested in politics like you are, like I am. But if they go to this budgetbreakdown.org and they just scroll through the charts and the statistics, which they don't bury you with numbers and minutiae. They were very clear about just focusing on the basics, on spending trends and the like. It is impossible that they would look at this and give a blank check to Olympia to keep spending money the way they have been, to give a green light to taxes after they've been raising them and raising them, even when they've been running surpluses. They've been raising taxes. There's no way that anyone would look at budgetbreakdown.org and reach that conclusion. Any reasonable person. So that's what we need. More reasonable people, in addition to you and me, other reasonable people who don't follow politics so closely, to check this out. So you have a friend, friends at work, friends, from your social club, your Rotary, your Kiwanis, Lions Club, over at the Eagles, your friends from church, your friends in school. Check it out, budgetbreakdown.org. All right, it is coming up on 21 minutes after 8. Philip J. Vandenberg III around the corner with his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. He breaks it down from that vantage point coming right up. On the Commute with Carlson, it's 21 minutes.
Somewhere out there, John, like 3 or 4 days maybe, Phil, of some snow headed our way.
Yes. Snow is creeping into our forecast.
Still waiting for that Christmas snow.
I'm watching all the networks, all three, ABC, NBC, CBS, Como, Cairo, King, all with three different forecasts. That means a big surprise.
Mark might not get snow for Christmas, but Seattle TV stations will be getting it for February sweeps.
So. Well, we'll
see what happens.
We'll just send you the audio or the video of the snowfall in our areas, and so you can enjoy it vicariously.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of vicariously, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who love to see socialists scored big time and owned big time by Philip J. Vandenberg III, here he is.
You know, Donald Trump, somewhere, what is it, overnight, Monday into Tuesday, the Office of Financial or Office of Budget Management, OMB, Office Management Budget, and the Trump administration announced this freeze on some spending that had to do a lot with grants that the federal government awards to local jurisdictions. And boy, did that freak out a lot of Democrats, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Let's start with one of the responses on X by Seattle Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. And ultimately, a federal judge ended up putting, a stop to this or a temporary halt to this based on an injunction. But before that all happened, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal posted, "Trump's funding freeze is a direct attack on the American people." Remember that word, those two words, direct attack. Patty Murray, Washington senator, wrote this on social media. "Republicans need to open their eyes to just how bad Trump's illegal freeze on federal funding will be for their states. This move is already causing chaos and will cause actual harm to families." So add that causing chaos and cause actual harm to families to what I just read from the Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. And then there's this.
It's what I love about Pramila. She never exaggerates.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to play you a clip that came up on Como News, but it's part of the written statement from our new governor, Bob Ferguson. Here's Mary Nam reading that written statement from Ferguson about this whole effort by Trump and the Office of Management and Budget to put a freeze on some of this spending.
Como reached out to Governor Bob Ferguson for reaction to the federal funding freeze, and his office provided a statement that reads in part, "President Trump's refusal or inability to advance his priorities in a lawful and constitutional manner is creating needless and cruel chaos."
So needless and cruel chaos. Mm-hmm. So you've cruel got chaos. Needless and cruel chaos. Murray said chaos and actual harm to families. Pramila Jayapal, direct attack on the American people. Now, I don't know if Trump did this hoping to provoke this kind of action, but it just strikes me as ironic that the three Democratic elected officials here in the state of Washington just called this freeze or temporary freeze that's essentially currently on hold now such a problem, because they didn't seem to think that direct attacks on the Washington public or real chaos in our communities was a problem when Washington State Patrol Trooper Chris Gadd was hit and killed up in Marysville.
By an
while
illegal.
He was sitting, and the person that's going to stand trial for that is an illegal alien, Raul Benitez Santana. They didn't seem to think that this would cause problems or harm to the community or a direct attack on any Washington residents when a 29-year-old man in the country illegally killed a Kittitas County Sheriff's Deputy in Kittitas back in 2019.
Well, and
that would
you
be
know
29-year-old Juan Manuel Flores del Toro.
The people that they have picked up just this past weekend, the illegals they've picked up have violent criminal records.
So, is
there a reason that removing illegals like that out of our society and deporting them has a damaging effect on the community? It would seem that they're damaging the community by being here.
Right. And another example of this is an illegal alien that's suspected of killing a Seattle area man. I think he's from Kent, a guy that was hiking and camping out in Kittitas County near Blewett Pass, Ian Eccles, again back in 2019 or 2020. And so there's three cases just off the top of my head that I remembered. But Pramila Jayapal, Patty Murray, Bob Ferguson, they don't seem to be concerned about the threat to the community with that. But boy, they sure do if Trump is thinking about cutting off money that goes from the federal government to local agencies.
It's 31 minutes after 8 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Another executive order from President Trump will tell you what this one will do right around the corner. It's 36 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. Yesterday was Carolyn Leavitt's first day facing the press as the official press spokeswoman of the Trump administration. She replaces the utterly unforgettable, but not very much missed, Corinne Jean-Pierre, who is famous for lugging massive briefing books that she would furiously be searching for the soundbite she was supposed to be voicing, for continually covering for Joe Biden's intellectual decline, cognitive decline, for repeatedly misrepresenting the truth on all manner of issues. She became kind of a punchline. She was so inept and over her head in this job, yet she was insisting she was an historic pathbreaker, not because of the fact she could do the job well. She did the job worse than anyone's ever done it before. She was, however, a black gay woman, so that was supposed to be a sign of great progress, that someone completely inept and unqualified for a job got the job. Well, Carolyn Leavitt is a night and day difference from Corinne Jean-Pierre. And unbelievably, she is only 27 years old. Now, you got to understand something about being the White House press spokesperson. And, you know, this is where I actually have some sympathy for Corinne Jean-Pierre. It is a daily tightrope walk. On the one hand, you want to represent your employer as effectively and persuasively as possible. On the other hand, you are facing a phalanx of media people who are playing a game of gotcha. They want to play, you know, see if they can throw you off your game, see if they can catch you stammering or repeating yourself or, you know, halting and then trying to regather your thoughts. I mean, anything that looks good, that makes you look bad, makes them look good. So day after day, that's not an easy job. You got to be up for intellectual combat. I would love a job like that. But you might remember in my earlier years, I did Point Counterpoint. I loved exchanging views. I did the show with Ken Schramm, to a degree the same story. But Carolyn Leavitt has to go out there and face all these people from media that are hostile. At least Corinne Jean-Pierre got to face media that were supportive or at least anti-Trump and were often trying to help her do her job. None of them are going to be helping Carolyn Leavitt do her job. But listen to how she presents herself. Again, this is a 27-year-old.
To the American people.
I commit to telling the truth from this podium every single day. I commit to speaking on behalf of the President of the United States. That is my job. And I will say it's very easy to speak truth from this podium when you have a president who is implementing policies that are wildly popular with the American people. And that's exactly what this administration is doing. It's correcting the lies and the wrongs of the past 4 years, many of the lies that have been told to your faces in this very briefing room. I will not do that. But since you brought up Truth Seek, I would like to point out, while I vow to provide the truth from this podium, we ask that all of you in this room hold yourselves to that same standard. We know for a fact there have been lies that have been pushed by many legacy media outlets in this country about this president, about his family, and we will not accept that. We will call you out when we feel that your reporting is wrong or there is misinformation about this White House. So, yes, I will hold myself to the truth, and I expect everyone in this room to
do the same. Good for her. That is the perfect standard. I understand that you're going to hold me to account for telling the truth. I just want you to know I'm going to be doing the same when it comes to you. You have just as much an obligation to tell the truth as I do. So you hold me accountable, but understand I will be holding you accountable as well. Good for her.
John, she did something that was real different here while you and Phil were talking on radio. Good Morning America. Michael Strahan went to the White House outside where most of the reporters do their report, you know, on the evening news and the White House behind them. And she's there outside, and he did a one-on-one with her. Totally casual. I have never seen anybody like that come out of the White House and go one-on-one on a major morning show and just talk about the new job and here's my plan and here's how I got it going and here we go.
Was this a planned interview or was she just outside and he waved her over?
Obviously, ABC set it up, but right. I've never seen, again, with past personnel in that position come out of the White House. And obviously, this is probably before her press conference for today or whatever, and just talk with a major network and, yeah, here I am. Here's what I'm all about. I love the job and da-da-da. I've been watching for audio. As soon as I see something, I'll pass it on to Phil here so you guys have it.
By the way, speaking of audio, here she was breaking some news to the assembled press, not about anything that the president was announcing, but instead giving them an update on those notorious, infamous drones that were sighted in New Jersey and New York a few weeks back, and people were speculating about, you know, are those foreign? You know, is that the Chinese? Could it be the Iranians? Drones launched from a ship in the Atlantic, possibly? And she says, no. Here's all you need to know about those drones.
And before I turn to questions, I do have news directly from the President of the United States that was just shared with me in the Oval Office from President Trump directly, an update on the New Jersey drones. After research and study, the drones that were flying over New Jersey in large numbers were authorized to be flown by the FAA for research and various other reasons. Many of these drones were also hobbyists, recreational and private individuals that enjoy flying drones. In time, it got worse due to curiosity. This was not the enemy.
Okay, so the FAA said, yeah, we know all about the drones and we cleared them for flying. I'm guessing that if they had been from Iran, they would not have sought FAA approval. Good on her for clearing the air about that. Now, by the way, speaking of hostile people in the news media, Jim Acosta from CNN, famously for being openly hostile and anti-Trump when he was covering Trump for CNN, which is supposed to be news, not propaganda, he is leaving CNN as CNN tries to regain its reputation for doing news and not propaganda. Have a listen.
It is never a good time to bow down to a tyrant. I have always believed it's the job of the press to hold power to account. I've always tried to do that here at CNN, and I plan on going doing all of that in the future. One final message. Don't give in to the lies. Don't give in to the fear.
We haven't. That's why we're not watching CNN anymore.
Hold on to the truth and to hope.
We do hope that things will get better there now.
Even if you have to get out your phone, record that message. I will not give in to the lies. I will not give in to the fear. Post it on your social media so people can hear from you too.
You know, this guy is so shallow. I mean, he had such a prominent role at the network, and he's like Dan Rather. He's just really not that bright. But he was telegenic. And he always speaks in these grave tones, you know, suggesting, you know, seriousness of purpose. Again, Jim Acosta really just isn't very smart. Here he is, supposedly. This is Jim Acosta's lowlights, we'll call them, as assembled by the Media Resource Center.
Damn it, I will say it out loud. that it is our right, it is our duty, it is our role to ask the President of the United States if he's a racist.
At one point during this address, the President referred to the coronavirus as a, quote, foreign virus. It's going to come across to a lot of Americans as smacking of xenophobia.
The President seems to harbor racist feelings about people of color.
He also continued to paint immigrants as criminals when they come across the border illegally. Donald Trump's radical ultra-nationalist agenda beginning to take shape this morning. The President of the United States looking like a wannabe dictator. A hard-right Supreme Court appears poised to turn back the clock to the 1970s.
Jake, I think our founding fathers are probably rolling in their graves right now.
What are you, the voter, prepared to do to hold accountable those politicians who choose Trump over American democracy?
Okay. First of all, if someone does his job like this and thinks he's telling the truth, he's clearly in denial and deluded about what the truth is. This also explains maybe why CNN says, you know, it's not going to get better with Jim Acosta. We need real journalists and intellectually honest commentators. He is neither. So he will not be missed. He is departing CNN for Substack, where he will probably disappear, and will not be missed and will not be lamented. But the, on the other hand, the IQ of the people in CNN, the IQ in the building went up when he walked out, and media will be better for him not being there. It is 48 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So this is a headline in the Seattle Times. This story is running in their editions this morning. This is the headline. ICE sightings, meaning Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE sightings in Seattle help us report on Trump's policies in the Pacific Northwest. And then the Seattle Times is looking into how the Trump administration's immigration policies are affecting people in the greater Seattle area and in Washington state. If you or someone you know has been directly affected by the change in immigration policies put forth by the Trump administration, or have been the subject of an encounter with an ICE agent or workplace action by ICE this month, we'd like to hear about it as part of our reporting process. And then they get into four story tips that relate to ICE sightings within the food service industry. Contact food reporter Jackie Variano. For stories that relate to ICE sightings at other small businesses or workplaces, contact business reporter Paul Roberts. For stories that relate to ICE sightings in general, please contact assistant Metro editor Anika Varte. And if you or anyone you know has been impacted by changing immigration policies, or for tips on how these policies are impacting the Seattle area, contact social issues reporter Nina Shapiro. Okay. Where is the... And if you know of an illegal immigrant who has committed violent crime here in the Seattle area or is a gang member, contact our criminal justice reporter. Where's that? If you know of someone who is in the country legally but creating havoc and breaking the law, contact this reporter. Why aren't they doing that? It's because they don't want to tell the whole story. They are so desperate to find evidence to oppose the policy that they're only asking selected questions that slant in one direction. Again, this is part of the problem with woke newsrooms. They often, well, miss the story. It's 5 minutes to 9 o'clock. Have a great day. Let's talk again tomorrow. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI.